Welcome to another episode of Side Hustle City, the podcast that helps you turn your side hustle into your main hustle, with your hosts, Adam Kaler and Kyle Stevie. All right, guys, welcome back to another Side Hustle City podcast episode. And as always, my trusty co-host, Kyle Stevie.
Hello.
Well, we already have been talking a little bit about crypto and blockchain and things like that on the show. Not a whole lot. We mostly talk about real estate. But one of the startups I'm involved in is a crypto-based, blockchain-based real estate startup. We started out as a way for international investors to purchase property in the United States. And we've tried out a few other things, just kind of testing things out, see where the market was. For a while there, the crypto market kind of went in the tank, and now it's back and thriving, and you've got institutional investors wanting to get in, and you know, you've got people like Elon Musk and Tesla, and you name the big bank. Most of the big banks, they were hating on crypto for a while there, and now they all seem to love it now that they've got in pretty cheap after they destroyed the price in 2017. but yeah, you've got a lot of institutions, a lot of funds, people like that that are, you know, taking crypto a lot more serious now than they did back in 2017. And our guest today is one of my co-founders in CPROP. And CPROP stands for Crypto Properties. But Luke Sestito is with us today. Hey, Luke.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me on the international podcast. coming out of Cincinnati, right?
That's right. Well, Covington, Kentucky, technically, but you know.
Don't forget that, Luke.
Yeah, across the river. You can throw a stone and hit the city of Cincinnati.
Right. We got a Kentucky guy here with us.
I wouldn't waste the stone throwing it across the river.
I'm actually in Dubai, so we've got half the world covered tonight.
What time is it there?
It's midnight.
Oh wow, you're getting on here at midnight, boy. Well, you've been bouncing around. You were stuck because of COVID. You were stuck in what, Morocco for a while?
Yeah, when the lockdown happened, it occurred rather rapidly in some countries back in 2020, and so I was locked down for a while, but. Now I'm free. I think things are opening up, and I think that's probably a good thing for real estate as a whole. And certainly, I know everybody's tired of being locked up. So I don't know how long it'll be before international travel gets fully back. But we've been doing a little bit of international travel with CPROP because we're trying to finish putting together a few deals. What you said was absolutely right. You know, 2017, when we started, you know, we were focused on that idea of cross-border transactions where people say you're in China and you want to buy a property in the U.S. You want to understand, how do I do that? What's a safe way to transact? And, you know, I think blockchain is a good way to give people some confidence in the real estate that they're buying.
So what are you seeing right now? I know a lot of the people that listen to our podcast are real estate investors, or they want to be real estate investors. And you travel all over the world. You got your ear to the ground when it comes to international real estate. And if somebody was looking for a place to – say they were done with America and they just wanted to leave and they wanted to take whatever money they got, they want to invest in some property in an up-and-coming market, what are some of the places you've been to that you think there's opportunity right now?
Well, first of all, don't be done with America, because when you travel, I know we have our problems, but man, I miss home when I'm away too long. But, you know, I think one of the biggest frustrations, so you mentioned Morocco. When I was in Morocco, there's beautiful real estate on the Mediterranean in Morocco. But think in terms of you're sitting in Covington, Kentucky. Let's say that in your mind, you said, hey, I want to go to Morocco. Well, first of all, you don't know what developments are there, what's available when it comes to real estate, number one. But then secondly, also, who do you trust? So if you go to Morocco and you decide you want to buy a property, you know, in the United States and also in Europe, you know, the way that we transfer the title of property and the way that property is conveyed to one person from one person to another, there's a legal guidelines that are set. They're easy to follow. But many times, if you want to buy a property in another country, you don't know what those legal guidelines are. So it can be super tough for each individual to understand what properties are available, but then even more so to understand, you know, this guy that's selling me the property, does he really have legal title? Who am I transferring money to? You know, I was in Turkey and a guy told me, he said, Luke, listen, he said, you're American. He said, Americans, if you take and give your money to an attorney to buy a house, he said, you think like, okay, I gave the guy the escrow and the deal's going to get done. He said, there's a lot of places in this world where if I give my money to the attorney, I call him tomorrow, he moves somewhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes we take for granted the little things in a transaction of the trust. But when you're trying to transact globally, because every country has different laws, different rules, it can be challenging.
Yeah. So what about so Turkey's one of the hottest markets, I would say. I mean, when it comes to, you know, the value of a property. I watch a guy, he's from Cleveland, but he's renounced his U.S. citizenship, and now he's living abroad. He's all over the place. His name's Andrew Henderson. And one of the places he recommends the most seems to be Turkey.
Let me tell you. So the first time I went to Turkey, sometimes I think, Americans, because of everything that's went on in Syria, et cetera, you always hear Turkey portrayed in a rather negative way in the media. But the Turkish people are wonderful. And Istanbul's an amazing city. It's full of history. And the cost of living is very cheap. It's a country that's predominantly Muslim, but there's Christian populations, Jewish populations there. And you have a huge influx of people in Istanbul that come from Europe. So you have a lot of Germans, British, Spanish that come on vacation. And the U.S. dollar is super strong right now. So both in Turkey and the other country I'll mention to you is Brazil. The dollar is very strong right now. And beautiful, beautiful countries. Turkey, you know, maybe if you get out into the mountains or the hills, the people are a bit more conservative. But in the city of Istanbul itself, really a great place.
Yeah, and I've heard
great
that
place
it's
to buy real estate.
Yeah, I heard it is only going to go up in value because I mean it's at the border, it's at the crossroads of, you know, Europe and Asia. So in a way, it's kind of like a international trade type of city. And, you know, they're very strong, like their economy is very strong. You've had some issues, I think, mostly based in politics on, you know, with their currency dropping and unstable government sometimes. I know they had the coup a few years ago. And but the location of Turkey is supposed to be really good. I've also heard Georgia, you know, some of the Eastern European countries are really good right now. Bulgaria, I think Serbia, people talk about a lot also. So, you know, there's always been some problems, mostly during the 80s and I think part of the 90s with Eastern Europe because of, you know, the Cold War happening and things like that. But I think a lot of those countries are opening up. I mean, they're democracies now. They've, you know, they're capitalism, you know, capitalism prevails there. It's not, you know, communist countries anymore, but they still kind of have that communist mentality a little bit there. I think they have struggled with innovation. And when you're American, you go there and there's a lot of opportunity to us. I think there's things you see that they don't see themselves.
Yeah, well, I think you were with me together. We went to Ukraine a few years ago and you saw the Ukrainian people in a lot of way reminded me of Americans 200 years ago. You know, times are tough for them. They're trying to get out of that mentality, but they're hardworking people. And welcoming to America. And I think the dollar at that time was 23-1. So if you're looking for, the most bang for the buck, yeah, Eastern Europe is also a good bet.
I think they were paying, 12% if you put your money in a bank there? Like just for a checking account, you're getting 12% on your money. It's nuts.
Yeah, but of course, now in the world of blockchain and crypto, and who wants 12%?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of the stuff that's happening in DeFi. I know a lot of the people that listen to our podcast are probably either invested in crypto at this point or they're, you know, considering it. And, you know, the national media more is talking about it more and more. I think every episode of CNBC now, they're talking about blockchain. They're bringing somebody, some crypto expert in to talk about the space. Like, what do you see right now going on in crypto outside of just, you know, I know the ICO thing didn't really pop off. There was too much regulation. Now you've got CryptoKitties, these NFT things that are popping up. You got these DeFi things. You put your crypto in an account. You make a whole bunch of interest on it. What are you seeing right now? Where are the opportunities at?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, well, you mentioned NFTs. So for sure, NFTs are the new cutting edge. You know, I talked to a friend of ours, Giotto, Luke, 2 months ago, and he told me, yeah, NFTs. And I didn't even know what an NFT was, right? But NFTs have started to become crazy.
Luke, for everybody who's listening who doesn't know, what does NFT stand for?
So it's a non-fungible token. So now there's the ability to take and make these custom tokens. Keep it in mind that I'm not an expert in blockchain. Maybe we can get one of the CNBC guys. But, you know, everybody that turned $1 into $2 now is an expert on TV. But, you know, as I understand it, you can take a piece of art now and put it on the blockchain, and then that art becomes a specific token. And man, people are selling some of these tokens for, you know, hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars. I know they did some with pictures of Vitalik, I've seen. And so now art is moving into sort of a blockchain form. And, you know, actually, when I spoke to Giotto, I talked to him about NFTs because he was talking about creating an NFT for each individual piece of real estate. So a piece of real estate could actually become an NFT on the blockchain and be traded. So the idea of the NFTs are really cutting edge stuff.
Well, I could see a specific, like a famous architect, if they build something and you could sell that as an NFT, because in a way it's a piece of art. Right. Just like, you know, that's what's hot right now on NFTs is the art.
How does that work? If you're selling it with the idea that the investors get buying a piece of art, and you got an investor who's buying it because they want to share the equity of the building, isn't there a conflict that's built inside of that?
Not necessarily. I mean, the thing about the NFT is, so if you create a piece of art, every time that piece of art transfers, you get a royalty. So every time someone buys that NFT, you get a royalty. So for the architect, it would make sense to like build something, sell it as an NFT, because there's only going to be one, right? Mm-hmm. But really the NFT, Luke, we have to talk about this. It doesn't really apply to physical property. It only applies to IP stuff. Banksy, right? They just created an NFT of one of Banksy's pieces of art. But they had to burn the original live on TV so that people knew that the original was gone, and the new official version was this digital version of this Banksy. And I can't remember how much money it sold for, probably millions of dollars.
They sold Jack Dorsey's first tweet for $1.2 million.
That's wild.
Yeah. Wonder how that works.
Yeah. I even saw a company out there, Adam, that makes a digital bond now. And the digital bond is actually each bond that they issue represents a certain amount of Ethereum or Bitcoin or a combination locked. And each, they make the certificate, but the certificate itself is a piece of art that becomes an NFT.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, there's some, and I don't claim to understand it, like I said, but that's sort of the cutting edge. And that's where all of the, you know, guys who are out there in front are starting to make money. But right now, the money for I'm going to call, you know, PC, who's a developer that we know in Croatia. He used to call me a normie. He said, "Luke, you're a normie." And so the normie is the normal people who really don't understand blockchain, but are just investing to make money. And where the normies are making money now is in the DeFi space. And this has been the case since, you know, mid-2020, where this idea of decentralized finance has come out. And, you know, it's enabled normal people to start to make fees that at one time only belonged to banks or other, you know, institutional type players. And the DeFi market right now is just, it's crazy the amount of money that's being made.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. So BlockFi is something I looked at. I've looked into several of them. Gemini, Coinbase, they both pay interest now.
Well, Nexus does too, right? They're always on YouTube's. They're the ones that they have the YouTube advertising before every one of the videos I watch.
Oh, okay. I don't get those commercials, but yeah, I get different ones. But yeah, okay. Nexus is maybe another one. But Gemini, I think, you know, on Bitcoin and Ethereum, they pay 3.5%. On Litecoin, they pay 5.5%.
Yeah, and Filecoin was like 9% or something.
7.5%, 9%. But if you go to BlockFi, BlockFi is paying a higher percent. They're paying up to, I think, 8% on some of these on Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Is it because they're not Winklevoss owned and there's
yeah, exactly.
a little bit more risk?
Yeah, there's probably more risk and right. And they don't have the New York, you know, Bit license or whatever that the Winklevoss twins have. So yeah, Luke, I mean, there's opportunities out here, but you've seen interest rates that are ridiculous in some cases, right?
Yeah, well, I think in terms of you're talking in terms of interest. So there's a lot of companies out there. Let's use, for example, maybe one of the biggest ones. There's Aave and there's Yearn Finance. And they create these what they call vaults, which are essentially smart contracts where you can lock your money in. They then take that money and they use it for any number of things, maybe arbitrage between exchanges, et cetera. And then you get paid a percentage of the fee. And let's say you're locking up a stable token like USDT, you know, or there's a whole bunch, there's a whole iteration now of stable coins. So you lock up your stable coins and you make 12 to 15% annual interest.
Yeah, DAI makes a bunch of money.
So let's walk. You guys are nerds. So let's let's walk through for people who are unnerdy or who want to be nerds but don't know how to get their foot in the door. Let's walk through this whole the decentralized finance. So
okay.
I got the option to go to a bank and get less than 1% growth on my savings account. I can do the traditional COD or whatever, cash on deposit, not make shit. Or I can roll the dice and I can go into decentralized finance and basically put my money in here. Now, if I put my money into, let's say, like Sushi Swap, or whatever the hell it's called.
Or DeFi, or
Nexus or anybody, are you able to get your money out whenever you want, or are you locked in for like 6 months, 12 months, 18 months? Yes, you can.
Okay,
so it depends. Both. Okay.
Yeah.
So first of all, you mentioned SushiSwap. Let's talk about SushiSwap, about Uniswap, about PancakeSwap. What are those? Those are all what we call decentralized exchanges. So if you talk about a Gemini or Coinbase or Binance, everyone knows those, right? That's an exchange where you go, you have to move tokens to it, and then you can trade with other tokens. And your coins are left on that exchange. So in the old days in 2017, if I had Bitcoin and I moved it to KuCoin or I moved it to Binance or I move it to Gemini, my crypto is in control of someone else, right? And the whole idea of crypto was be responsible for your own money, right? Don't be responsible for an exchange. The whole idea of blockchain is don't have a centralized point of attack. So people didn't like the idea of putting money on a centralized exchange. So really what the other way to trade was decentralized exchange. And what that meant was I can keep my money in my Trezor or I can keep it on a MetaMask wallet or some other, you know, type of software wallet on my computer. And when I want to trade Bitcoin for Ethereum or Bitcoin for USDT or some stable token, all I do is I plug in my wallet or I type in my password on my computer, and I can swap one token for another over PancakeSwap or SushiSwap, or the biggest one is right now, I believe, is Uniswap.
And so you're going to pay an interest rate.
Centralized exchange.
Yeah, but you're going to pay a rate in order to make that transaction happen. And it's a pain in the ass. Because
What's the difference between paying fuel and paying that interest?
It's kind of their fuel, their version of their fuel.
But wait, but think about this. So you're going to pay a rate, right? But so right now, I'm going to give you an example because I'm in Dubai, right? So let's say that I want to move money from the U.S. to Dubai and I don't have a bank account. I have to pay Western Union, right? Just or someone, right? Somehow I have to move my money from my U.S. account here. And if I use my Visa, who am I paying? I'm paying Visa. So either Western Union or Visa or MasterCard or Chase Bank or PNC Bank, they make money every time I do a transaction, and that enriches them. The idea of Uniswap is that Adam or Kyle or Luke, I can post my money and become a liquidity provider on Uniswap. And every time a swap is done, now I make part of the fee. I make part of the money. And this is the idea of decentralized finance. This lets people from all over the world make liquidity pools so that when people want to swap tokens, they can do it without using a centralized exchange. And so that's why DeFi kind of blew up when it came on the scene. And when I say blew up, I mean in a good way. You know, in 2020, this idea of DeFi started to get huge because some of these DeFi projects aren't returning 12% a year, but they're returning 300% or 120% or 180% or 200%. And that's not with token appreciation, okay? So I can now keep my money in USDT, part of it, and then part of it in another token, and use that liquidity in order to make money on my money.
So you can be a person who needs to make the swap, right? Or you can be a liquidity provider. So even if you're one of the people that need to pay the fees in order to move from one token to the other, you're paying those fees, but you could also be making money at the same time. So you're both sides of it.
So let me give you an example of, you guys both know Sandy. Sandy's our business partner from New York. And Sandy—
Wait, isn't he our CEO? He's our CEO, right, Luke?
I don't know what he is. He's something different every day. he's from New York, so he's smarter than all of us together.
That's right.
But Sandy will tell you, if he was on the program, he hates crypto in 2017. He said, listen, I can't sleep, because the market goes 24/7. I don't know if it's going up or I don't know if it's going down. Decentralized finance could be something good for Sandy. And here's why. He could hold his money in a USDT stablecoin, okay, or a DAI stablecoin. Now he's not trying to make money dependent on if the market goes up or the market goes down. He's simply trying to make interest on money that he has, but at a higher rate than the bank. Now, that doesn't mean there's no risk, okay? Because the very first thing my dad ever told me about money is the higher the risk, the higher the reward. So, you know, if you're going to try to get a high rate of return, there's a risk, okay? There's been what we call rug pulls, where teams have taken the money and disappear. But the more DeFi advances, the more smart contract controls are put in place, you know, this has become less, at least we hope. That's the goal. This is the Wild West of finance, guys. This is the total opposite of real estate. But there's huge, huge returns right now in DeFi that honestly, I don't think you could get legally any other way unless you were in Bitcoin early.
Right. Well, and I think another way you can say this is decentralized is that it allows non-accredited investors, people who have traditionally been left out of, you know, high return investments, it allows them to participate in some of these. And you know, I mean, the fact that you have these rules in the United States around unaccredited investors, the idea is that if you lose all your money in an investment that you made, you still have enough money left over, or you're a sophisticated investor because how did you get to that million, $2 million, whatever it is you've got in the bank? You must know how to manage money, or you must understand, you know, you've got the money if something goes wrong, right? Well, with people who are living paycheck to paycheck, you know, they aren't accredited investors for the most part, right? They're not considered accredited investors because the government thinks that they're unsophisticated or they don't have the money to lose. So
they sell them lottery tickets.
So they sell them lottery tickets instead, right? That's what you get to invest in. So, you know, and this, the whole DeFi space allows people to, in a fairly safe way, enjoy even 4%, 5%, 6% returns on, like, say, a DAI stablecoin in Gemini, which is a legit regulated exchange with good security. You know, and you know, 2 years ago, Luke, I mean, how many exchanges have failed where they just send out emails? Massive. Yeah, they say, pull your money out because we're going to close this thing down in 3 weeks, right? So, a lot of those have failed.
Yeah, but this, I think, is why the DEX exchange. So, you know, even in the early days of crypto, everything was done on the DEX exchange anyway. The centralized exchange idea only came about for people like, I'm going to say people like me. I would say people like you guys too, but maybe not. But for me, you know, when I first started to buy and sell Bitcoin and Ethereum, you know, the easiest way was to go find an exchange and buy it. But like you said, it comes with a risk because anytime you put your tokens out there, the exchanges can be hacked, et cetera. So now these decentralized exchanges are gaining popularity. And the whole DeFi space, you know, I guess you, Adam, I think you actually sent me the cartoon back in 2017. And it was a kid sitting with his grandma having lunch. And he said, "Grandma, I have $1 million in Bitcoin." And she said, "Congratulations, you can buy lunch." And he said, "No one takes Bitcoin." Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, you know, Bitcoin, while it had value and while people hold tremendous amounts of value now in crypto, it was in the early days, not any way other than appreciation of the value of the token to make money. And so when the DeFi space came out, now you have a way to generate revenue from your holdings at a much higher level than a bank. But today, keep in mind that most of that, if not all of that, is just people making money off people trading tokens back and forth. So the question is, if I was going to become the devil's advocate, they would say, it's just people making money off each other while they trade money to each other. How is that sustainable? And so that's where in the DeFi space now, you need to see what we've seen now with Bitcoin. You mentioned at the top of the podcast, Elon Musk, Apple, Fidelity, all of these guys are starting to see value in crypto as an asset. Now what you need to do is you need to see institutional players who start to see ways to bring DeFi and the real world together. And that right now is what's happening. So not to just keep talking and jump ahead, but yeah, as you guys know, CPROP recently made a deal which will be announced next week. It's actually going to be announced right here on the podcast.
Nice.
With a company called Series One. And Series One is a group of investment bankers. They're in Miami, Singapore, New York, Dubai. And what they want to do is create a fund of funds in the Bahamas, which is created. It's going to be a $1 billion fund. And what they want to do is they want to help mainstream institutional investors invest into security tokens. And then those tokens would move into that DeFi space. So when you see this start to happen, this kind of mainstream adoption, this is huge for both the blockchain people, the crypto people, as well as the people who have been championing mainstream adoption.
So talk about how CPROP plays into that whole ecosystem there with the institutional investors.
Yeah. So think in terms of, you know, back in 2017, we realized early on, and we still believe, whether we're right or wrong, will be proven out shortly, but that one of the best use cases for blockchain when it comes to real world is the real estate market. And, you know, the reason why is because there's a number of transactions that take place. It's in a trust environment where you're not sure sometimes who to trust or how things work. And we went through sort of this iteration of cross-border transactions to building an exchange. And that's really where we ended up, that the easiest use case for blockchain and real estate is the idea to take properties, to be able to turn those properties. Let me walk you through one as an example. Let's say that I have a commercial building and I want to take that commercial building. I want to put it in a special purpose vehicle. Let's say the commercial building is worth $1 million, and I want to turn that commercial building now into 1 million tokens, each valued at $1 a piece. If you look around the world, you'll see dozens of people have done this. This is not revolutionary. But what happens once you turn that commercial property into tokens? Nothing. And do you know why? Because right now, there's no liquidity. So any developer you talk to in the world, pretty much, if you say, listen, there's a way to bring new money into your project, and that's instead of going to the big banks, et cetera, is to take in tokenized properties and then allow you to sell pieces of that property to individual investors. They'll say, oh, yeah, if you can bring me money, let's do it. But the market up until now has lacked liquidity, and it has lacked a centralized place that you can trade those tokens.
Yeah, T0's pretty much got the only real one that's of any popularity. That's the St. Regis in Aspen.
Yeah, and if you think about it, even with T0, a lot of these tokens trade on what we call, especially in the U.S., a bulletin board. And so it's basically, if I want to sell 100 of my tokens, I have to post them on that bulletin board and wait for someone to come and buy, right? So the market, while maybe that's better than being in owning a building and not being able to get any liquidity, there's not a real liquid market to trade those tokens. And so the idea with CPROP was to build this centralized exchange in a jurisdiction where it's the rule of law governs it, right? So people, if they put their tokens on this exchange, they have to feel like it's the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ or someplace where they know it's real world law governs it. There's KYC, there's AML. And then the most important piece is there has to be a liquid market. And so to have the liquid market, you need to have the institutional investors. And that's what Series One has been working on since 2017. They've been working on the idea of how do we bring together family offices, banks, institutional investors, invest them into security tokens and get them a return that's higher than what they're getting now off traditional investments, but at the same time has a higher level of safety than the Wild West of DeFi. So, if I'm a family office, maybe I don't want 120% return and a lot of risk, but if you can get me 15 or 20% annual return with low risk, maybe you have my attention, right?
And the difference this competes in a way with real estate investment trusts, REITs. But with the REIT, it's thousands of properties in one REIT, right?
Yeah. So in this case, you can tokenize a REIT or you can tokenize an individual property. But keeping in mind that we're talking about a couple of different things. Because we're all Americans, we tend to focus heavily on the U.S. market. But keep in mind that in other parts of the world, even in the Middle East, so I sat with a bunch of guys in Abu Dhabi that are connected to the Abu Dhabi Stock Exchange. And we were talking about the idea of a REIT. And they said, you Americans have this idea of a REIT, but we don't even use that yet, right? So we're almost talking about in a lot of parts of the world outside the US, it's kind of like jumping from a landline phone straight to a cell phone with 5G. So if parts of the world that don't have REITs can jump straight to tokenization, they basically skip a step. And the other thing is, remember, not all REITs are fully liquid. So there's REITs that trade on the stock exchange, and those REITs are liquid because you can buy and sell. But the vast majority of private REITs, your money is locked up for 7 to 10 years. which in some cases is okay with institutional investors. But if you're more of a guy that owns a couple of commercial buildings or a smaller company and you want to get your money out, the idea of being able to trade the value of that real estate without going to your bank can be huge.
My question for you then is, it's expensive to get onto an exchange. I mean, you've got to have basically, I guess, without putting things into a fund, it really doesn't make sense to do the tokenized offering for, you know, whatever percentage of your property you're going to do, unless it's valued above, let's say, $4 million. So you can do like a Reg A or something along those lines. Have you, how are you guys addressing that price, the pain point that's going to be the price of actually getting to the exchange?
Yeah, so there's it's a good point and a good question, and it's a big issue. Keeping in mind that what you're talking about right now is, again, it's U.S. based. So the first exchange that we're talking about with Series 1 would be put in Liechtenstein, not in the U.S., okay? And the second exchange that we're talking about building would be in one of the GCC countries, like Dubai or maybe Riyadh in Saudi, Dubai in UAE or Abu Dhabi. And here's why. So if I go to UAE, the majority of big commercial buildings are government owned. And they actually have a rule in place that the government have to maintain a certain percentage of ownership, say 75% ownership of each building. Now, that means that the government is sitting on billions, if not trillions of dollars that they don't access right now, because how do you sell 25% of one of those commercial buildings? So if you look at the big stock of commercial buildings worldwide, that's where you want to start. So you want to start with commercial real estate or with funds, right, that hold the REITs, as Adam said. So if you have a fund that holds a bunch of real estate, that's where you want to start. You want to start above that $4 million mark, and you want to start outside of the U.S. Because look, the U.S. right now, we don't have a need like other countries do. So, you know, we already have a method to provide that liquidity. And let's be honest, the regulators in the U.S. aren't in a hurry to move. But if you go to other jurisdictions, so Liechtenstein, for instance, already has all the laws put in place to build this type of exchange. So CPROP, we actually have an exchange demo on our website up and running. We have the exchange built and ready to go. What has to catch up now is the laws and the rules that govern that exchange. A country like Liechtenstein has that done. Switzerland's moving this way. Singapore's moving this way. Dubai is very advanced in UAE and what they have done as well. So the idea is, one, as you said, bring down the cost of listing on that exchange by owning that exchange. But then second of all is you need to have a big fund like the Series 1 fund that's being created in the Bahamas that brings the liquidity, so that if I'm a developer or I'm a building owner and I take the step to spend the money to tokenize, I know that there's liquidity there to buy it up before I spend any money.
Yeah, it's funny we're going over this now, because this is what I've been writing. I've been writing a book on this for like how-to book on this for a couple weeks for people that have, you know, they've got $40 million apartment community or whatever it is that they want to get competitive advantage in their offerings. And so I had,
yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal, Kyle, especially even if you talk about the other aspect is the social housing aspect, which Sandy is more of an expert on that piece than I am. But if you look around the world and the amount of money that goes into community housing or social housing, you know, how do you bring money into that space, and how do you reward people for investing? You know, the World Bank, all of these big players, they're constantly looking for new ways to give home ownership to people, because study after study shows that home ownership is the key to people really having a stake in their society and, you know, starting to feel like they can lift themselves out of poverty. So, you know, if you're able to use tokenization And then even in the social housing market, make those tokens tradable between the big institutional players. Now you've got an exchange that adds some real value to the world. But I think, you know, that no one will argue if there's no liquidity, you don't have anything. So liquidity is the key. And that's where Series 1, they want to bring the institutional players in, right? So now you have the liquidity. And then think about taking this DeFi space. Okay, so remember we talked about the DeFi space, which is let in, you know, anyone can participate, even the little guy, and make money. Now we can take the CPROP token or any other token, and we can let, you know, the token holders benefit whenever a transaction occurs, supporting the transaction, making money off the transactions and the fees, so that now the people that are part of the community benefit instead of it just going to a big centralized bank or institution.
Well, what I like about this too, Luke, is I can invest in my own community. So for example, yeah, the castle here, right? You know, it's $2.5 million, say, right? So you've got the castle, you know, there's people who, you know, maybe I wanted to finish out the upstairs, right? But I need to raise money for that. So yep, I could go to a bank and borrow, you know, $1.5 million or whatever I need to build that upstairs. Or I could put part ownership of the building on an exchange, sell essentially part of the building in order to fund that project, because I know when the project's done, it's going to go up in value. But it also gives the people in this community an opportunity to invest in that building. Even people who typically would get gentrified out of a neighborhood as things progress. So, you know, more projects come in, people get priced out of the community because, you know, a new development comes in, all of a sudden a 3-bedroom is, you know, $2,400 a month of rent. So the people who are already living here have to leave. So this gives them an opportunity to say, hey, no, instead of leaving, I want to be part of these projects that are happening. I want to be part of this big, you know, I mean, what, if somebody wants to build a, you know, 200 unit apartment building over in Covington, you know, that project's going to cost $100 million plus potentially, right? So you want to build this big project, you've got people, you need to raise money. So why wouldn't you put that project on something like the CPROP exchange and say, hey, look, you know, the bank's going to give us 50%, mezzanine's going to give us another 20%, but we need to raise 30% from investors. The first investors should be from this community because they're going to benefit as the value of that property goes up. And one thing you didn't mention, Luke, is also people can earn dividends. And I think actually you might have just mentioned this. People would earn dividends on the property. So say the property is making $1 million every year, right? The 30% of the people that invested in that property, or the 30% of the cap table, that of the investors, they get a percentage of those profits, and they could get a percentage of those profits in additional ownership tokens, or we could pay them in cash or whatever we want to pay them in. But generally, you're going to pay them in additional ownership tokens of the building, and then you're going to keep the cash profits. So, it, you know, it's a way for people to invest in their own communities and benefit from the increasing value and the profitability of those buildings.
I think that one.
And also, Adam, remember this, you can tokenize any part of the capital stack. So you use the castle as an example. If you needed money to go out and put on the addition to the third floor, you know, you can go out and tokenize that debt as well. So when you start talking about offerings that are security based, you can tokenize all or any part of the capital stack.
Exactly.
Well, the one thing I want to talk about is affordable housing and what it can do in terms of putting the ball into the court of municipalities, because now you have an exchange, you have the ability, you know, for people to get in that aren't accredited, and you can basically divvy up all these houses that are too expensive to build for what they're going to have to be sold for people to live in them. So you can give almost a guaranteed, like a municipal bond, like we're talking about, like a 3% growth tax-free on top of like a charitable donation to be part of it. And then you can have a hold period for 3 to 5 years, whatever you want to do. And then you can give people liquidity that you don't have with municipal bonds. That's, I mean, I know they're trying to do the muni bond thing, and that would be somewhat similar to that, but be specifically for affordable housing.
Yeah. Yeah. Luke, we have a white paper out there floating around that Sandy did for affordable housing, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sandy is really passionate. You know, my passion is on the idea of the exchange because I like to make money. Sandy, he loves people. So Sandy's super passionate on the community housing side. Now, Sandy likes to make money too, but you know what I mean. Yeah, the idea of community housing or social housing, especially having spent some time in North Africa. You know, in the U.S., we think we have problems with home ownership. But, you know, in certain countries in the world, there's no way to own a home unless you bring the majority of the money up front, you know? So,
yeah, there's a 30-year mortgage in Egypt or in some of these other places.
Yeah. And think about it. What's the percentage we're paying in the U.S. on a mortgage now? Like 1.5%, or is it even below?
Well, that's the Fed funds rate is like 1.3 right now. But I think the like a mortgage, like you can get one for 3.25% right now, maybe.
Okay. So I'm not doing too bad on mine. Mine's at 4. But so you think in terms of 3.25%, right? You go to Egypt and you want to borrow money for a house, you're going to pay 25% or 30%.
Venezuela? So you might as well not even buy a house there. And in right. Argentina, well, it's crazy too.
You're talking again about the poorest people in the world always pay the most. And so if there's a way to bring this dynamic of social housing, but again, remember, why are they paying 25%? Because are you sure you can get your money, right? So there's always the human dynamic. But the banks and the governments of the world pump billions and billions of dollars every year into community and social housing. And I do believe that blockchain and tokenization are a better mousetrap. And eventually, in the next 5 years, as institutional investors start to understand tokenization more, you're going to see it adopted for this market in a big way. Outside the U.S. first, but then eventually the U.S. will follow.
You know what the funny thing is a side hustle. I was thinking about going down to Buenos Aires in Argentina, because if you go down there, you can bring, what is it, $10,000 in cash in U.S. dollars with you if you travel outside the U.S., Luke?
$10,000, yes.
$10,000. So you take $10,000 down. You don't even have to take $10,000. You take $1,000 down there. But their banks, at one point, I don't know if they still are, but I think they are, they're paying over 50% interest on a checking account. Remember how I talked but about Adam, Ukraine is 12%? Yeah.
Adam. But let me say this. Remember when I told you DeFi is dangerous? Banks in foreign countries can sometimes be dangerous. Remember, there's no FDIC insurance in every country. So if you want to go to Argentina and you want to take $10,000 and put it in the bank there, let's say that you make $5,000 a year interest. The plane ticket's going to cost you, say, $800. So deduct that. You can sit in your house today. You can invest $10,000 into liquidity providing for a company like DYP. There's another amazing company out there called Orion that their LP right now, I think, is paying 190%. And you're going to have about the same amount of risk, in my opinion. But at the same time, the return is going to be well above the 50% mark.
Well, the crazy thing is there,
if you're willing to take risk, go to DeFi, in my opinion.
Yeah, well,
which
that's a good point.
Financial advice. It's just my crazy opinion. Well, if you see me homeless in a couple of years, they'll know, don't listen to Luke.
Well, the crazy thing is, the banks are paying you 50% to keep your money in there, but if you want to borrow money, it's 75%. 75% for a mortgage or any of that stuff. I mean, it's nuts.
Americans, and I'll add Europeans to this, and Australians and certain other countries in the world, were extremely spoiled. And Americans, for sure, were really out of touch with how the rest of the world lives and the struggles they have.
I would use the word entitled.
We are. I mean, it's the one thing I've learned traveling. We have just about everything we need, and we've become somewhat selfish because there's a whole world of people that every day they get up and struggle. And, you know, our struggle is, what kind of Starbucks am I going to have?
True. Yeah.
So I think, I think this DeFi space, guys, and especially the idea of these security tokenization offerings in the affordable housing market is going to be huge. And I also think that this idea of being able to trade securitized tokens on an exchange for real estate is going to be the future. And, Adam, we're having a summit for that.
Yeah. And when is that?
I believe April 7th.
I'll post something on, I'll post something on Facebook. Summit.
Yeah. The government of Liechtenstein is going to be on the call. There's going to be a couple big developers on the call as well. So I think, you know, if people are interested specifically in real estate tokenization, if they have an hour on April 7th, they should check that out. And if you're interested in DeFi, I mean, just Google it. There's 5 million Medium articles and, you know, 10 million YouTube videos.
Same with NFTs. Plenty. And I won't go into how you make an NFT, but there's do it yourself. Like, you know, go to this website and, you know, get an Ethereum wallet and deposit $100 and then go to this website and create your, you know, your artwork and then turn it into an Ethereum token.
That just scares me. Like, what if it doesn't appreciate? Like, what if people don't give a shit about some sort of digital piece of art?
Spend much money creating it. I mean,
no, I know. I'm saying for investors, like for buying into it.
Yeah, it's scary right now. I mean, CryptoKitties. I mean, I remember when CryptoKitties came out, Luke, it was huge for like 2 months and then the whole market took a shit and then it wasn't worth anything. And now all of a sudden they're worth $1 million again.
But honestly, we're getting to be old guys. And so to me, it reminds me a lot of comic books and baseball cards. They're always going to have a value, but only to a certain market, right? If you show one person a comic book, he'll be like, so. And another guy will say, man, that's a comic book in mint condition. That's a hard to find item. I'll give you, you know, $5,000 for it. So, you know, I think NFTs are here to stay because the young generation of gamers, you know, the ones that are the age of my kids and younger, they're super into the digital world. And so I think they're never going to go to having no value. Just the value is going to fluctuate based on trying to find someone who will buy it if you need to sell it.
So it'll be like a 10-year peak and valley type deal, like anything with a commodities, the specialized commodity type market, like baseball cards. Now I think the Luka, who's the guy plays
Luka Doncic?
Yeah, his rookie card. He's only been in the league for like 5 years.
He's a beast.
Over $1.2 million or something for his rookie card.
Yeah, maybe like a 10 PSA or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's got to be mint condition and.
But still, I mean.
Yeah. So think about this. I saw a company the other day. They're taking all of these baseball card ideas and they're allowing teams. So I know Adam, for instance, is a huge Steelers fan. Adam, you
yeah, right.
That's said in sarcasm, people. But you know, whatever
terrible
team
talent
follow,
NFT.
Those Maybe. Teams can now offer NFTs that are specific to the team and the players every year, and people can hold those. So I think you're going to start seeing the people who are into baseball cards, comic books, et cetera, move also into this NFT space for sports fans because it's another revenue generator for teams and celebrities. And for people that are fans, it's something no one else has.
Yeah. Well, Luke, talk, what's next for C-Prop? What kind of, where do you see like revenue coming from these projects, from this exchange? How do you make money off of that?
Yeah. So the key issue right now is you're going to see a press release come out next week. We've signed a joint venture. The company is going to be called Series 1X. And that joint venture is 50-50 between C-Prop and Series 1 to build this exchange in Liechtenstein. Where the revenue comes in is the fees that are generated off the exchange. So as Kyle mentioned, you know, you have to have a property of about $4 million in the U.S. in order for it to trade. Outside of the U.S., it's going to be much less. But anytime you put a property on the exchange, there's going to be a fee, and then there will be trading fees that are generated every time a property changes hands. So we're currently working on some cool DeFi ideas for the use of the C-Prop token so that the holders of the C-Prop token will be able to stake their token and secure the network. And by staking their token, they'll be able to earn a percentage every time a trade occurs. So if I'm an institutional player or investor and I want to use the exchange, I don't have to know about crypto. I don't have to come and buy C-Prop tokens. But behind the scene, you're going to have a DeFi component between Series 1 and C-Prop, where the token holders really gain value as the exchange grows, the amount of fees grows. And, you know, we think overall that's going to be beneficial to the ecosystem.
Awesome, man. Well, what is it? 1 o'clock in the morning in Dubai right now?
Yeah, but Adam, when I'm talking to you, it seems like noon.
So I spent the whole podcast not checking my email, but looking up all the you were talking about Orion. Is it the Orion protocols that you're talking about?
Yeah, so Orion protocol, and you know, this is a company I got into a couple of months ago, and it just went crazy. I think today the market's down, so it was, you know, 21, 22, 23. But their concept is huge in the future, and that is Orion is going to link every exchange, both decentralized and centralized. So as you guys know, jumping on an exchange right now, you have to have an account at every exchange. Mm-hmm. Orion will auto link to every exchange and automatically give you the best price when you buy a token. So if the Binance price is cheaper than the Gemini and they both trade the token, you just sign into Orion and Orion is going to give you the best deal.
So how did you get in with them?
Orion is a crazy cool project in my opinion. And if you become you can become a broker now for Orion. They're rolling this piece out. They're going to start trading NFTs. But if you're I've been a liquidity provider, a LP provider for Orion, and it pays about 190% APR right now.
How do you get in on that?
Not to mention they have, I think you can stake them on KuCoin if you just buy their token and hold it. I think both KuCoin and Binance allow you to stake it and make, you know, somewhere between 12 and 20%, if I'm not mistaken. I don't do that, but the returns for Orion are crazy. There's a project out there called DYP, which is a DeFi protocol, and they pay your interest in wrapped ETH, so Ethereum. And the returns, man, I got in it a couple months ago, and you know the return was almost 2% a day. Now it's dropped to about 0.5% a day, but you know you're still talking 150 to 200% APR a day or a year with some big returns, and you're getting paid in ETH. So Adam told me he's doing some Ethereum mining. If you want to generate Ethereum, there's some cool DeFi projects out there now that pay in Ethereum, and some even pay in USDT. So if you're worried and you just want stable token, you think the crypto market's going to go to hell, you can still make money up market or down market nowadays.
How did you get into be a liquidity provider for them?
You know, a lot of research. You know, I kind of stumbled. You know, Adam and I have a buddy named Giotto who's part of the CPROP project. He's probably our biggest champion, and he's not a normie. He's a guy that understands blockchain, understands, you know, coding, et cetera. And, you know, he told me, he said, you know, you should really look at migrating CPROP into some kind of DeFi idea, because decentralized finance is going to be the future in 2020. So I started researching DeFi and trying to understand decentralized finance. And the simplest idea I could come to is, okay, think in terms of two people want to trade over an exchange and they want to trade Ethereum for, let's say, Orion. Well, on a centralized exchange, the exchange provides that ability. On a DeFi exchange, someone has to provide that liquidity. So if you're going to hold Ethereum in that token, you post both of them. And then when someone buys, they're basically giving you their Ethereum. They're taking your token. And then when it sells, it's the opposite way. And so the idea of the pool is normal people provide liquidity and get paid. Now, if you guys are interested in DeFi per se, we should do a whole nother podcast on DeFi, because there's something called impermanent loss, which means if you jump in and out, let's say I put in, just to pick a number, 10 Ethereum and 10 of another token. Maybe when I pull all my tokens out, I have 12 Ethereum and 8 of the other token. So depending on what's happening in the pool, there can be more or less of one token than another. And if the value of one token goes up and another goes down, there's risks associated. But if you're looking for something just to generate daily, weekly, monthly, annual revenue, you know, being a liquidity provider is super cool. You know, I'm willing to take the risk of, you know, one token becoming more valuable than another, et cetera, just for the fees you can generate. I mean, I talked to a guy the other day. He told me he's generating $50,000 a month on a $120,000 investment.
Wow, that's not bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Teach me how to do it, Luke.
Yeah, I know. Where do we start?
Yeah, no. If you want to do a podcast, we can do a podcast and walk people through. You guys know my background is accounting. So when I started doing DeFi and some of the projects, I made me an Excel spreadsheet. And I actually charted every day what my return was on the money that I invested. Because also remember, there's projects in DeFi that'll tell you you're getting 200% return. But by the time you pay all the fees and you do all the trading, it's not worth the money. But yeah, there's some cool projects out there and there's some big returns out there. But again, learning how to do it is the key. But, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it, probably even a monkey.
Are you available next week?
Yeah, just let me know what day. I should be in Dubai next week. I'm available. Let me know, and we can do a segment on DeFi. Hopefully, having me on twice doesn't totally destroy the podcast. You'll be down to like your mom's as listeners. Will be all that's left.
Well, I mean, if it makes people 25% returns, I don't think they're going to give a shit.
No, I sat with some guys in Dubai last week, and the guy said, "If you can show returns like that," he said, "people will chase you." I said, "Yeah, well, it's not me giving the return." I said, "I'm just telling you what's out there to make." And again, you know, I would never tell anyone that DeFi is not the crazy Wild West, and we should talk about the risks, and you know, you should do your own research, all of those good things. It's not financial advice, you know. But if you have a high risk tolerance, or you know. For me, why go to a casino? Because I'm never going to get the return I can get in DeFi. Right. So, you know, I only invest money that I can lose. And so far I've been winning, which never happens at a casino.
You know what I want to do a show on? I want to do a show on these kids. I don't know if you know, but there's like Chinese students like at Miami University where they drive these like ridiculous cars. They'll drive like Lamborghinis and all these other like Bentleys and everything else. And what happens is you've got people who in China who will pay because it's really expensive to import those cars into China. So what they do is they pay these kids in the United States. They essentially buy the car, allow the kid to drive it for, I think it's a year.
Yeah. My neighbor did that with Mercedes.
Yeah. And then once it's a year old, the fees, the import fees are a lot lower. So then the kid will send the car back to China or send it to China after that, and then they'll just buy him another car.
Yeah. My neighbor was driving a Maserati, and then he drove a Porsche, and then he drove like all these Mercedes. He had a pretty good gig.
That's not too bad.
Adam, no. We need to let the people in Price Hill know this. We need to hook up the Chinese with money with the people of Price Hill, and everyone in Price Hill can have a Mercedes and instead of just the symbol.
And they'll all have broken windows and missing car stereos also. That's the problem.
That's just a joke for those. I don't know how often does Adam mention Price Hill on the podcast.
3 or 4 times an episode.
Okay, good. So everyone's familiar. What Rio Linda was to Rush Limbaugh, Price Hill is to Adam. But it's not his adopted home. It's his real home.
It's my real home. That's right. That's right. Well, Luke, leave us with something. How do people reach out? Like, what are opportunities for people to get involved in any of this?
If anybody's interested, in the real estate and what CPROP's doing in real estate, please jump on the website, CPROP.io, and you can check out, and the summit's free, you know, it's no cost to it. It's just more or less trying to educate people on what's going on. And anyone that's interested in DeFi, you know, can always reach out to you guys or to me. And, you know, we can talk about it on the podcast next week. You know, there's a tremendous amount of opportunities right now in that sector. So I think, it's good. I mean, I'm super excited. I'm super passionate about DeFi because I'm making a little bit of money doing it. And anytime you make some money, you become passionate about something.
Exactly. What do you got, Kyle? Anything?
Gotta go pick up Charlotte for volleyball.
Oh, there you go. Well, all right, Luke. Well, maybe we'll get you back on here next week. We can talk specifically about DeFi and how people get into some of these. And maybe I'll do it today, and then I'll report on my winnings next week.
Yeah, there's no maybe.
We'll just have to do it.
If anybody's on the schedule, we'll just have to ask them. I'll be out of time.
Yeah, the other thing is maybe also we asked Josh to join us because Josh jumped in maybe a month after I jumped in to a couple projects, and we can see how he's doing. So it's not just my word. Maybe he jump at least join us for 5 minutes or so.
Love it.
Which Josh is that?
A good one.
He's one of the investors in C-Prop.
Yeah, so we'll have an international flavor to it.
English Josh. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, yeah. Luke, I don't know if you know this, but we got our first piece of mail the other day. Me and Kyle Stevie here, we're starting a company because one of the things we want to do is, you know, not just talk about some of these things, but actually put our money where our mouth is and see if we make money. That way other people know if they can make money at things. So we started a dump trailer business, right? These dump trailers that people need for roofing and landscaping and all that. So we're going to park them here at the castle, but the name of the company is Take a Dump.
Nice. What I thought you were going to say is that you and Kyle got your first piece of fan mail from a guy in prison who told you how handsome you were.
No, that
wouldn't. Now we're still waiting on that. We're still waiting on that. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
All right. Well, if it comes this week, you'll know it's just me sending it to you guys.
All right, Luke. And the Bengals have revamped their defense. So we got to talk about that.
The great thing about being a Bengals fan is the best time of year is the draft.
That's it. Yeah, you're always in the top 10.
Hope springs eternal.
That's right. All right, Luke. Well, thanks for being on the show. And then next week, we'll get it going again.
Yeah, get some sleep.
All right, sounds good. You guys enjoy the week. And if you see Pete Rose, give him my best.
All right, man. Get some swarm on me.
All right, we'll do. Later, guys.
Bye. See ya.
Bye.